You're a trained nurse, and you came down from Scotland when you married your husband, who's a doctor.
That's right.
And when you came to Bristol, you were really looking round, weren't you, for something like the County Women's the Scottish
Rural.
Scottish Rural, the Rural Institute.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there was already established in Bristol a Towns Women's Guild, and you were immediately asked, or early on, you were asked if you would be
president of it.
Mm. And
that was the beginning of it.
And that was about 1938, wasn't it?
Yes, 38, 39.
That's right. And then you were involved to a large extent in sort of evacuation preparations and things like that, weren't you? I just moved a bit
yes,
closer.
Yes.
And then what happened next? Then you actually had to take executive responsibility, didn't you?
I had to take the position of chairman.
That's right, yes.
Because the evacuation was taking place, and the first chairman of the guild was going with her husband to the country because he was a schoolmaster, and taking the children out of the danger that was then being anticipated for the city of Bristol, city and county as it was in that day.
Yes, yes. And there was only one Towns Women's Guild then, was there?
There were several at that time, but in my own area of this part of Bristol. Mm. This guild had been started in the previous year.
Mm. And could you just tell me what it did at that time? This is when you first joined it. How did it spend its time? What was its function in the local community, do you think? The local guild?
Well, I think it was, I would put at that time, to establish friendship among the people living in that area who would have to be together very largely during the anticipated bombing, which indeed came to Bristol, of course. And therefore, there was a centre there that people could turn towards find their own talents probably being developed.
Yes, yes. But does the government actually use the local branches, the local Towns Women's Guilds, to help in arranging for evacuation and things like that? I mean,
No, it didn't at that time, really. Their members took part in the evacuation and gave help where they could, but they weren't officially employed in it because, of course, the WRVS wasn't being at that time, wasn't it?
Well, it was just
WVS.
Getting started up.
Yeah.
Yes,
certainly. Yeah. Yes, and of course the city had to take its own responsibilities for evacuation.
Yes, yes. So anyway, you then were responsible for actually running it, running the local thing, or at least...
Well, with the committee, of course. There was a very good committee.
Yes, yes. And then you stayed in that position, did you, until you got on to the National Executive, is that right?
Well, I stayed in the position until I got on to the National Executive. I think it was, I came off, but I became their president and still am of that very self-same guild.
Did you really? Mm. Yes, and is that Westbury-on-Trim Guild?
No, Harfield and Bishopston.
I see.
Yes. Westbury-on-Trim Guild is the oldest guild in Bristol, I think I might in saying.
Mm. And what sort of people, can you generalise about what sort of people actually joined at the local level in that branch? What sort of women were they?
Do you know, it's one of the things I would find very difficult to do. I can't generalise about women. I think they're really individuals.
And were they, on the whole, middle-class professional women, or were they working women?
I think there was a smattering of all.
Mm.
Because we really did regard the common meeting ground as something very important, and still do.
Mm. So there wasn't a class, it didn't have a class character.
No, there was no class consciousness.
And they were married and unmarried?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
And politically neutral... And religiously neutral.
Yes.
So it really is a rather good meeting place.
It's a very good meeting place, and I think I find that, and I found it all through the country. I wouldn't have known what people's politics were, and I would never certainly have known what their religious views were unless I cared to get into discussion about it quietly, not in the guild. Although we were urged in the early days in the guild life to have discussions on these subjects, provided we covered them all. That we didn't just pick and choose.
Mm. And you were saying, I think, I don't know when Alice Franklin said this to you, but something like, you said that there was a certain amount of pressure, actually not even to be Christian in the organisation, I think. And Alice Franklin said something to you like, you don't know what it's like to offer your hand and not have it shaken.
Yes, she certainly once said that to me very distinctly. It is in my memory that she did. But I wouldn't say it was on the subject of religion. It was rather more on the subject that she was Jewish.
I see.
That she felt that.
Yes.
That as a Scot, I would never be inclined to think
did she actually have a sort of inferiority complex, do you think, about being a Jewish?
Yes, but that's, I think, part of their persecution, is it not, that they, that they do assume that.
Did she look very Jewish? I don't know what she looked like. So can you describe her?
Very masculine looking.
Mm.
And very masculine in approach.
Was she really?
Mm. Mm.
How do you mean? Aggressive? You mean rather dominant?
Yes.
Sort of person? I see,
yes. Yes, very... Oh, yes, she was a dominant character.
Yes, I see.
And didn't suffer fools gladly.
So anyway...
None of us do, of course, I suppose.
Anyway, it was religiously neutral, anyway.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And,
so well, I prefer to think that it was non-sectarian.
Yes.
Non-party political.
Mm.
And, of course, you find that in many other organisations, and once you get used to it, it's very simple.
But that does knock out a lot of possible subjects for discussion, doesn't it, rather?
It shouldn't.
I mean, if you can't talk about politics, you can't talk about religion, that's two major areas of life knocked out, isn't it?
Well, not privately, because you would follow it up privately. But what I mean by saying that we didn't talk about it and still don't talk about it, supposing you were to talk about Presbyterianism, well, you should give an equal chance to everyone or the other.
Roman Catholicism or something, yes.
Well, or even more so, you should give it to agnostics and atheists on the bunch.
Yes, yes, yes. So, what happened when the war was declared? What happened to the branch? How did the war affect the branch?
Oh, very badly. Very badly, because there was really... It came so quickly at that time that evacuation had to take place and had to... As the book Our Towns points out to you, it revealed tremendous problems. That everything more or less panicked slightly for a short time and then settled down into acceptance that was almost blind.
So really there's a general shake-up to start off with, and then you settle down, what, with presumably some people gone.
Oh, yes.
But others coming in. Others coming in.
So, and I remember one very interesting thing that was said to me in another connection when I was after the war was finished, or just about the time the war was finishing, I was coming over from the services side of the YWCA into the civilian side in Bristol, following a very well-known Scottish figure and the wife of Sir John, as he later became, Inskip, Lady Inskip, in her position as president of all the YWCA work. We were bombed entirely in the YWCA. We hadn't a stick or a stone left, nor had we our hostel.
In Bristol,
in Bristol. Nor had we our residential hostel, anything but a hole in the ground. Everything went. And the first task that was given to me as the new president was to head up an appeal for £50,000 from the city to replace the buildings that we had lost. And I went to a very well-known industrialist. We'll leave up the name. One of the wills. And I was talking to the board of directors. And he, as chairman, said to me, "Are you the chairman of the Horfield and Bishops and Townswomen's Guild?" And I explained to him that I was very closely linked with it. If I wasn't the chairman, I was certainly the president. And he said, "I think I must have been the chairman," because he said, "There, we have one help left in the house, and the only proviso she's made is that she gets to her guild every Wednesday that it's being held. That is her," and he said, "everything stops to drive her in to the Bishops and Horfield Townswomen's Guild." Good. They were as loyal as that.
What did they do, actually? What does she do every Wednesday?
A guild? Well, it
during the war, that is, I mean.
Oh, during the war. Oh, well, there was a lot of war work that they were able to help with.
Was there?
Oh, yes, there was quite a lot of things they were able to help with. Many of them were working very hard in their own homes. Many of them were working without any equipment almost at all left, because it was very difficult at that time. And their handicrafts and their cooking and their interest in social studies, music and drama, was a lifeline.
It was something to keep you
yes,
going in a
yes,
very
it was a
crisis
lifeline.
Situation.
And they rose, many of them rose to great heights in all the things they did take up and had great interests. And above all, it was the friendship that ran through it all, as it still does, where a guild is functioning
yes.
properly.
Was it? Would you really describe it as a feminist organisation?
No, not for me. Many people might say ha-ha to that, but I don't. I think it's... more, there is only...
It's like the WIs in a way.
Yes,
it's companionship and recreation for women, but it's not specifically anti-man or in any sense.
No. And that is where we've slipped very badly with our Women's International Years and a lot of things. Why don't you have Men's International Years just as well? Mm. Many of us feel that quite strongly. Yeah. I haven't met any male chauvinist that I can think of at the moment.
Mm.
This is a matter of outlook.
What about the WVS, though, Mrs. Courtney? How did the local towns women's guilds fit in with the growth of the WVS, really?
It didn't affect us. It was totally different. The WVS had, and still have, a very outlined job to do, and a very good job it is. But it is their job.
Mm.
The reels and wheels they had, and which covered so much at that time, their caring for children and invalids. And
yes, I was really thinking this because, you see, Alice Franklin, one or two people said to me, Alice Franklin was very suspicious of the WVS when it first got started and didn't really like it. She felt that it was going to poach on the Towns Women's Guilds preserves, and I wondered whether in Bristol you felt that this was the case, in fact, that it had actually, in a sense, pinched your members or deprived you of...
I expect that if anyone went into the WVS and found that a duty that they'd undertaken on behalf of those, taking books to hospitals, take anything you like, and that they'd accepted that responsibility, they would put that first, because that was a responsibility. The other is your responsibility to your guild, but not to the same extent as your personal involvement in doing something for somebody.
Yes, yes. Yes. Anyway, you didn't feel the two organisations conflicted much at all.
No, I didn't. And I would say this, that the Townswomen's Guilds gave many a woman an opportunity to realise the importance of public life. The importance of being able to express yourself, if need be. The importance of understanding figures as far as you can, and the responsibility.
Mm.
One of the things that interested me very much was, in that £50,000 appeal that I was doing, I was working, of course, with very brilliant accountants and people who were giving all their services voluntary for the sake of the work of the YWCA in Bristol. And I once said to a very famous accountant in this city, well, that should really be done on the imprest system. And his reply was, I don't expect to hear a woman talk like that on finance. And my answer was, you'll never be a TGer, of course, or you would.
yes, it gets women out doing things that hitherto men
have never think they could have done before.
Yes, I think that's interesting, yes. How then did you get moved on to the national executive? How did that happen from the local level?
There was a big meeting in Bristol, and Miss Franklin came to speak at it. And there was a very anti-national feeling grew up at the back of the hall because money was involved. And I always feel that when you're asking people or telling people anything about money, you have to handle it a bit with kid gloves. I always take up the attitude, if I'm begging for money, it's your right to say no, but it's my right to let you know that the need is there. And it was something about asking for money and how expensive it was as the further away you got from London to do things. And I'm afraid I said that was nonsense, that the cost was exactly the same to post a letter in London as it was to post a letter in London for London or for Johnny Groats, if you like. And I understand she asked, who's that woman at the back? And the next was I was invited to go up and be co-opted to the national executive. And I can assure you that co-option even cost me blood, sweat and tears here, because some people had stood for the executive but never got in as elected members because they hadn't been in front of the public eye, I suppose, a bit. And here was I, co-opted straight away, and they didn't like it here. And they told me. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I didn't co-opt myself, of course, you know.
Mm. So, because she was a talent spotter, wasn't she, Alice Franklin? She was rather good at
hunting
out people. Mm. But of course, she, in a sense, she backed a loser from your point of view, didn't she?
She backed quite a few losers because, of course...
In the sense that, you know, you weren't a help to her at the national level
Well, I hope I was, while it was possible to be.
Yes.
Because I liked her very much and admired her brain enormously.
Mm.
But you have to measure you up with justice as well.
Of course, yes. Can you tell me a bit about the Constitution and all that? I mean, the great value was placed on the Constitution, wasn't it, in the Townswomen's Guild? And in the early days when you were connected with it, was it a genuinely democratic organisation throughout the country, would you say?
Yes, I think I would, because it was a rigid constitution, of course, in many ways, and had to alter from time to time to meet the changing society. But at the same time, I pay great tribute to the constitution. But because of its rigidity, it was eternally coming up with amendments and alterations and all this sort of thing that you spent a tremendous time. Because if you alter one section of a constitution as large as that one was at the time, you have to alter a great deal of its writings to keep it in line. And I always hoped and prayed that it might last for at least 5 years without any tinkering.
Did you feel before you actually went to the national headquarters as a member of the executive committee, although it was an appearance democratic, in fact it wasn't? Or was that only something you realised when you got up to the centre, so to speak, when you got up to the headquarters?
Do you know, Dr. Harrison, all my life I think I have tried to make national and local see each other's point of view, and to this day you never do, because locally you see it from a totally different angle.
Yes.
Nationally. And it's not so very long ago, on a national committee that I happened to sit on in London, I suddenly heard myself saying, the whole world doesn't stop at Charing Cross.
Yes, can you explain why there should be this antagonism inside the movement between the local and the national? Why is it? Is it just suspicion of London as such? Or what is it?
I think often national bodies have to do things that perhaps we haven't sufficiently discussed with the grassroots and given them the reasons why. Because during my period as chairman, I got well told off for asking for money, but they never refused it.
Mm.
You see, they first of all raised for their own work, the very first sum of money that I asked for, and told them why. They kept on raising it when you asked them. They didn't like it and told you what they thought, but they always passed it. I've never known them not to do so.
Because that is one of the problems. The headquarters is always asking for money. That's
yes,
one of the problems.
That's one of the problems, but you've got to explain very reasonably why.
Mm.
And I think during the time that the movement grew as rapidly as it did, they got back in their conferences for which we paid.
Mm.
But just now I should think it's more difficult because with inflation. People are having enough to do to live, and they find this is a tremendous burden to raise the extra money, unless they can be very sure that they're getting up.
How did you actually raise money in the local branch, you know, in the early years, the very earliest period in Bristol? I mean,
well, the usual thing.
Subscriptions, or did you have
Well,
sales?
No, the subscription has always been very reasonable and still is, I think. But the question of raising money comes down to the same methods all the time. Gatherings, coffee mornings, bring and buy, jumble sales, the rest.
Mm.
And the thing is, I think, that if you can let them see that the money they're raising will in return either raise the status of what you're trying to do or benefit something tremendously, as when they decided during my period to clear a camp in Germany, a refugee camp in Germany, and did it most brilliantly and most magnificently in Germany.
Mm. They can see what they're getting for their money.
They knew that this was being done and that they were being carried with the money raising.
Mm.
All that. In fact, in looking through this book just now,
Alice Franklin good at liaison with the local branches, do you feel? I mean, did she went out a lot to see the local branches, didn't she? How did she handle that situation, do you think? Was she dictatorial, authoritarian?
Yes, authoritarian.
Was she?
Mm.
So you feel at the local level she brushed people up the wrong way, rather?
Oh, yes, she did. She hurt.
Mm.
And she didn't realize she was doing it, because I don't think she should have meant to hurt.
Mm. Mm. Anyway, you got up as a co-opted member of the executive committee.
Mm.
And what did you find there, really? What was it like? What were executive committees like?
Very interesting. Very full of meat. Very awkward at times.
I mean, I don't know how many people were actually on the committee, about sort of 15 or so.
Yes, something like that, in my least.
With Mrs. Horton taking the minutes, I suppose.
Yes, Mrs. Horton. Well, on a shorthand, as it grew, you see, your staff had to grow to a certain extent, not out of proportion.
Mm.
But the national secretary was always the person that was responsible for that sort of thing.
Mm.
And then as we grew, you see, we would have probably an assistant secretary feeding
yes.
some of the education committee and the...
Mm.
And the
And you get this was all in Cromwell Place.
All in
I
Cromwell
mean,
Place.
That's
yes.
where you'd
yes. Still is, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. So anyway, you went what once a month or something up to London.
Yes.
To these,
yes.
These
in
meetings?
Fact, as national chairman, I was out of my home a very great deal because I travelled a lot as well.
Mm.
Because I believed in going out to meet the people.
Mm.
Sounds rather like the Queen, but it isn't.
But then, who were the chairman at the time you were there? Was Miss Loring? It.
Yes, that was the
Can
first chairman.
Can you tell me what she was like as a person?
She was a very able person. She was a very gentle person. She was a very gifted person. She was a very nice person to know. But she was a very shy person.
So she really was a chairman and not taking a positive...
She shrank from meeting people. It was an effort. She was terribly nice when she did, and people liked her very much. But it was an effort. For her to do it. She was an artistic person.
So really she was very much under Alice Franklin's thumb in a way, was she?
I think it would be fair to say that it had an effect on her.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then Mrs. Horton runs the office, really, does she, in conjunction closely with Alice Franklin? Is
well, you see, they were always together, morning, noon and night. And I think that possibly that was not in the best interests of the movement.
Mm. Because really...
Each should have developed along their own line more than was possible by...
Mm. So you felt that, in a sense, the executive committee felt that they were running things and, in a sense, rewriting the minutes of what had happened...
At times, yes.
..in such a way as to make it impossible for you really to control... things.
Mm.
Yes. What was Mrs. Horton like at that time? I've met her, of course, since.
Mm.
And she's a very mild, very quiet.
Mm.
It's difficult to size her up, really. Rather, she has bees in her bonnet, I feel, rather, about some things. What was she like at that time as secretary? Was she very energetic, very efficient?
A very efficient secretary.
Dedicated.
Depends how you apply the word dedication.
Well, dedicated to Miss Franklin.
Yes, that's right. That's
but
right.
not so
but
much...
But that's off the record.
Yes, but not so much to the organisation as such.
Mm.
It's more a very powerful partnership between the two of them.
Yes.
Mm.
Which, again, completely off the record, was often suspect within the movement, unfortunately.
Yes. Mm. They, in fact, shared a flat, didn't they? They had shared a flat from 1940 onwards, I think.
Oh, before that, I think. Well, I don't know. I don't know. It was very obvious and very unhappy.
Mm.
And I think that was the root
of
a great deal.
Mm.
Oh, much more unsaid than said.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, you gradually felt, as an executive committee, did you, that this really, some sort of control needed to be taken, really, in the end?
It was forced on us.
Yes.
It was forced on us.
Mm. Mm. So then you eventually had a closed meeting in which...
Then we reorganized things, you see.
Yeah.
And we had this Miss Cooper who came to us a year or so later, a couple of years later perhaps, that set us off. She remained, of course, as the assessor to the from the Department of Education, And then she came to us as a secretary. And I feel she put the great growth in the movement, I felt, came because she was such a visionary.
Was she really?
Oh, yes, she was a great visionary in education. And a lovely story that she was very fond of telling was that we should never decide other people's views about things at all, because she had been in a co-op shop where she was talking to the staff, and she asked a young man something or other, what were his hobbies? He said, I like quiet and peaceful things. And she felt it was a tremendous tribute from that young man that that was what he liked. She didn't denigrate it.
No,
she saw that there
no.
was a tremendous lot behind that. And I think she saw that a great deal in people.
You actually succeeded Miss Loring, didn't you, at first?
Yes.
That was the first sort of
yes.
major position
yes.
you had.
Yes. Yes.
And so presumably you gave it a little more direction, did you, the
tried
committee?
To.
Yes.
With the people that I worked with, because a leader's as good as her, a chairman's as good as her committee, really.
Mm. I'm just trying to remember, Miss Loring actually said to you, didn't she, at a meeting, it's getting very difficult or
yes,
something,
oh
and
yes.
you said, well, you'll have to make a stand or something like that, didn't you? What happened to her then? Did she resign then, or how?
She suddenly resigned, as far as I remember. I can't quite remember that clearly, but she suddenly resigned.
Mm. So you, there was ever a vacancy into which you stepped, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But you really did feel then that it wasn't a genuinely, by the time you actually saw the whole picture, you didn't think it was genuinely democratic, really, in the way it was being run before you had your, before you got rid of or dealt with the Alice Franklin problem. It really was not being democratic.
No, you could only keep your finger on a power button long enough for it to explode.
There was quite a lot of discontent from the organisers.
Oh, discontent all through the movement.
Was there?
Only once you're away from the centre, it doesn't really matter, because they don't need to know what you're doing. And they'll tell you that to your face if they like you.
Mm.
How you know, type of thing. And I think that's right. I think that's fit and proper. And then you have to find out how you're going to know and iron it out with them if you can.
So you had to get rid of not only Alice Franklin, but presumably then it also followed that Mrs. Horton had to go.
Oh yes, it had to come.
Mm.
Because it meant that we couldn't go on working like that.
So anyway, that was a major split, which really in a sense cleared the air.
Cleared the air, and then
and then you could get on and
yes,
start
yes,
growing again.
Yes, rocked home after that, really, in many, many ways.
Yes. So what would you say Miss Franklin's major virtues were? Because she had virtues.
She had great many virtues.
And she was energetic. What else would you say about her, really? She gave money of her own, of course.
Oh, she poured money into it. I'm sure she did. I wonder if we ever knew quite what it was she wanted to get back in return. I don't think we did. Because do we ever, really, if we begin to think about it? But either you feel the urge that's coming to go on and do things, even if it's not your way, to do it in the way that the people are seeing, and be there all the time to be with them in it, and to advise if you can, if another way might be better, I don't know. But I couldn't really have analysed.
She just really did give a remarkable amount of energy, effort, money.
Oh yes, everything of that kind. But I think possibly she didn't trust people enough.
Didn't delegate enough, you
think? Oh, she didn't delegate enough, certainly. But I think you have to let people feel that you trust them.
So that generated an atmosphere of intrigue, really, didn't it?
Yes, I think so.
Yes.
I think so.
Yes. Well, that's very emasculating for any movement, isn't it? If you can't
yes.
get real drive from the top.
No. But the drive was certainly there, and my sadness is, but that's not for Townswomen only, but for many other organizations, the difficulty there is just now to see clearly where one wants to go.
Mm.
Because it would have been, I would have hoped, that we made certain preparations through the latter period, not the one you were perhaps thinking about so much, but that, that having got the urge in the 40s to go forward, that the 50s we would have consolidated, and the 60s we would have begun to reap the benefit, and then the 70s we wouldn't be talking as we're doing today that the movement is going down, because they tell you that.
Can you remind me about the social survey work that was being done? This was being done in the war, was it, by local branches?
Yes. We had. They used to sometimes object to getting the number of questionnaires that we used to send out to them, but we used to tell them this is the only way we can get down to find out what is going on.
Can you tell me a bit more about what was done in Bristol then in that way? I mean, you actually surveyed local opinion, did you, or
yes.
local conditions?
Through the guild, you see, we surveyed local opinion. We found out how things ticked, what the departments were doing in the city, and we put on a tremendous Colston Hall effort for the waterworks of Bristol in the present and future, music and drama, with the costumes and things all made by the people, as we did in the Albert Hall with the sword. It was a wonderful thing in the Royal Festival Hall.
And did you, who decided what would be investigated? I mean, who decided what the subjects of these inquiries were? Then?
Well, very often you're talking of my time as the period I was in the chair, we decided in the education committee what was the reason for doing some sort of investigation on something that was going on, probably not as it is at present, pushed through Parliament without the people knowing very much what is becoming law. I was talking to a lawyer the other night and he said a book is out of date after 18 months, which is pretty hopeless. But you see, we would have been doing, I should have thought, at the present time, quite a lot of investigation into benefits of social security, say,
yes.
and why.
Mm.
You see, it's one of my hobby horses that this country would be very much better if we certainly had social security, but we asked in return some work for it.
Yes.
Done, in its name.
Yeah.
In the same way with violence, that if you find that a person is guilty of violence of a kind that can be repaired, repair it even if it's badly repaired.
Mm. Rather than sending people to prison or whatever it might
yes,
be.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. But it actually then was a sort of research agency.
Yes, it was a kind of, it was a kind of, if you like, market research
yes.
type of thing that we did quite a lot of. And
not just surveying its own members, though.
No.
Surveying
no,
other people.
Other people
outside.
As well, yes.
Yes.
yes. Finding out, really.
Yes, because of course the WI did that a bit as well.
Yes,
I mean,
yes, they did. We're very similar in the way we run, but of course, unfortunately, you see, at the present time, we have no longer advisors in education, which is a very great loss to our movement.
Mm.
Although, probably, one is judging hastily there when I say that, in the fact that the state has taken over so much, very much worse than we were doing it, I may say.
Yes. And in fact, you became the president again of the local branch.
I never wasn't.
You were all the way through, as well as chairman, you were president as well. Were you?
Well, locally, I was the president
locally.
Of my own guild.
Yes.
And then for a very long time, and then I was president of the federation the guild was in for a considerable time.
At the national level, you were chairman of the committee for what, 1 year, was it? And then you became
chairman for 14 years.
Oh, I see. Then you became president, didn't you?
No.
Oh, I
no.
see. You were just chairman. Oh,
no.
I see.
I became a vice president for a short time.
Mm.
But they objected to the fact that, I don't know who did, but the executive did.
Mm.
And in fact, I have it in writing from them that I had broken the common meeting ground by attending the plays in the Westminster Theatre in London, which were put on by the Moral Rearmament people, as you know.
Mm.
I wasn't taking part as a Moral Rearmament, but they had... They were calling in women whose names were known to talk to people, and I did that, and then they told me I'd broken the common meeting ground in my own time. And I replied, get on with your witch hunts.
But
Say, I really think in the last few years when they did that, it was pretty so-so. Well, never mind.
Yes. Anyway, you really were at the centre of things locally, all the way through.
All the way through. I never lost my local roots, because you have to have a place where you belong.
Mm.
And I think all national work has its periods.
Mm.
And you may as well realise there is nothing so past as a past.
But it's also particularly important in an organisation like that to really be sympathetic to the local view, isn't it? And if you're actually active in the local branch, then that gives you the right sort of perspective, doesn't it?
Well, I think it does, you know.
Mm.
Mm. I always remember that in a townswoman at one period, somebody wrote in, they have a correspondence thing on it when I was a national chairman, and someone wrote in and said, we are a very democratic guild. The voter after me was the national chairman.
That's very interesting. Is there anything else about the early days? The trouble is, I'm stopping in 1940, you know, strictly speaking, but it helps a bit to go a bit beyond that. Anything else about the Townswomen's Guild in the early days that you think ought to be brought out that I haven't asked you about their activities or their importance or what they did for women?
No, I think the importance was really in their beginnings when they were there at the time of opportunity, in Miss Franklin's time, and they were again there at the time of opportunity at the end of the war.
Mm.
And I think in both these periods of time, they accepted the opportunity as presented to them.
Yes.
And certainly there was no doubt about it that post-war they went ahead.
Yes.
With, and I think I have said to you already, if not I'm saying it again, that I meet quite a number of people holding important positions in this country. I mean, they're not the people whose names make headlines or anything of that kind, but they fill a conspicuously good positions, who say to me, you know, if it hadn't been for Townswomen's Guilds, I would never have attempted this. It was through their social studies and the opportunities that they gave in arts and crafts that I have done what I've done. And I think that in itself is an accolade.
Yes, I meant to ask you, in the early days, did you see much of the headquarters at all? Did they send down many people to the local branch?
No, not until we got for your money, so to speak. Well, when we got, we had up to 12 or 13 organisers in the field, and they came in every so often and reported to us, and then they got reports from us and they went back out into the field, and they alerted the National Committee that it would be a very good thing if perhaps the National Chairman were to come down and do a tour, or somebody was to come and do a tour, or an education advisor were to come. They alerted the committee to the needs that were there. And we always, as far as possible, tried to cover them and go when asked.
What actually was the function of the president, the national president, that is? I mean,
figurehead, really.
Really a figurehead, nothing
else.
Yes,
a figurehead. Mm. We, after Lady Cynthia Colville's departure, we were quite a long time before we had a president.
Mm. I can't remember, when did she actually depart?
Departed with the Franklin.
Oh, did she? She took Franklin's
part? Yes, because we were being ruled from the coal face, she called it. And I always remember that expression. And she didn't believe that the chairman, this was me at the time, was consciously aware of the fact that that was what was happening. And I was quite conscious of what was happening, alas. And for myself, I mean, at that moment of time. But there was no doubt about it that the president was she gave a certain aura of credibility, if you like, nationally.
Yes, access to monarchy, of course.
Well, we had it, yes, in that particular case. And, of course, when we got Hilda, Duchess of Richmond and Gordon, who came through my YW connections to be our president, we then had her, and she had been a member of the Guild in Scotland, where her home was, in Rothes, and therefore knew the Guild work. And she was a very, very devoted president all the years of her presidentship, which lasted for quite a considerable time. And then she was followed by the Mary Duchess of Roxburgh.
Mm. So if you look,
and now it's Mrs. Corbett Ashby.
Is she back again? Is she? I didn't realise that. But if you look at that business in 1944 again, from the point of view of what its significance was, it was partly a personality business, but it was partly the branches versus the national headquarters, yes. Was it really? I mean, that
it was. It came, if you like to put it that way, I think you're putting it very clearly, that the dispiece was right through, you see, and came up instead of going down.
Yes.
And it came up till it was the explosion blew the top off.
Because, you see, Alice Franklin did a lot of touring, didn't she? She went around a lot, and she knew her branches in a way, didn't she? She was very good at that, in a way. Was always very conscious that the headquarters mustn't push too much, but even so, you think she got... Well, she must have got it wrong.
She got it wrong. She personally pushed, you know. I don't know that headquarters pushed too much, but she personally pushed.
What actually was there at headquarters in those early days? I mean, what was it? What physically was there?
Two common places, the same places as they are now.
But I mean, they didn't occupy the whole building, did they? They had what, a committee room, didn't they? And
they had one committee room, which they, I don't know what they have now because I haven't been there for years. And then they had the caretaker downstairs and the flat downstairs. And for a time, I think there was somebody in the top floor, but we had to take that in and use the whole house during our period, you see. And
when you were growing?
Mm-hmm. When we grew.
Yes. So what did they have at the headquarters? Because the real life of the Townswomen's Guild is the guilds, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the much need for anything at the headquarters?
Well, they had the secretary, you see, Mrs. Horton and Miss Franklin, I think, shared a room as far as I remember. They had the...
That's very likely.
They had... what else had they? Then, as we grew, you see, the advisors shared a room, or I think, as far as I remember, the townswoman had, editor had a small room, and the organizing secretary had a small room. But the rest of the place was a big office downstairs where the pool of typists were. They utilized every corner of the place, of course, because it wasn't a big house, but I don't know what they're doing today. I should imagine that they've had to...
Sounds rather similar in some ways, yes. So you would meet as a committee where, actually?
In the big room upstairs.
I see, yes, with a little committee table and everything.
What
sort of records did they have there? What sort of bureaucratic stuff did they have? They presumably had records and files for every individual... Guild,
oh yes, that was very carefully kept, very carefully kept, and they had the records and files for every piece of, you know, for all the sections of the drama, music, social studies.
I see. So they had a double.
Oh yes. They had the records. They had the guild files, and they had all the other files.
Of course, both Fanny Franklin and Mrs. Horton had. Alice Franklin had civil service experience, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yes, she had this something or other. One of the.
She was at the Ministry of Agriculture and Fisheries.
But she got her. What was it? One of the orders of the British Empire. Didn't she?
Oh, did she? Yes, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, really.
But anyway, for that. And Mrs. Horton was trained in the National Union of Societies for Equal Citizenship, so she knew how to run an office, So I suppose bureaucratically they'd be very efficient, wouldn't they, really?
Oh yes, they were very efficient.
It's just
very
that
efficient.
They're not good at handling personalities, really. That's the point.
Very efficient.
Now that does bring the whole thing to life, really, for me. But just still, as I say...
Well, I wouldn't put that down, because I'm telling you. I made it as an absolute fetish that you weren't just to go for the lady of the manor to be your president, because she was the lady of the manor. You were not on any account. You must just throw the thing open, etc., etc., etc. Fair dues. But what has it meant for the townswoman? That everybody thought we were so democratic that we were almost communist. Really? It's quite true. And secondly, that it was such nonsense that people, because they were so and so and so and so, weren't just human beings in the very same way. And finally, if there is a thing that's upset them all the way through, it is that they haven't royalty taking any notice of them, except to come occasionally, as the Duchess of Gloucester did, and that was through Alice, Duchess of Gloucester. That was really through Hilda, Duchess of Richmond of Gordon, we got Alice of Gloucester to come. And she was very impressed and very nice about it. I believe they've had the young Duchess of Kent recently. Not Kent, Gloucester again.
Oh, yes.
The Danish one there, mm-hmm. and all that. But you see, they've never had any acknowledgement from royalty as such.
Mm.
And just they get a certain pride that the Queen goes to Sandringham
mm.
Guild
yes.
Institute.
Yes.
And that the Queen this, that, and the other.
Mm. What sort of person was Lady Cynthia Colville, actually? She was a connection with Queen Mary, wasn't she?
Was she? I don't know.
I mean, she was a lady-in-waiting, I think.
What? She was a lady-in-waiting, yes. Mm. But her son, Jock Colville, you see, was the secretary to the Queen.
Yes.
For a very long time.
Yes. She doesn't seem to have been very active, though. She was, as you say, a sort of presidential
yes,
figure.
Yes,
well, a sort of honorific figure,
really. Yes,
yes.
Presidential figure.
Yes, yes. Yes, well, that's...
But I think that started the fact that the people who could have helped you most...
Mm-hmm.
It's not what you know, it's the people you know that matter so often mm-hmm. in life. And the people who could have given you that entree to certain things, not necessarily by taking part, but not necessarily by being shut out.
Yes, it's very difficult to get the balance right. I mean, she was right, Anne Franklin was presumably right in trying to...
Get the person for the job.
Yes, and trying to not to tie it too much to sort of aristocracy and declining class attitudes.
Mm.
So she was right in that way, because if you're going to get a mass membership, you've got to democratise the thing and so on.
Mm.
On the other hand, you've got to make use of people who can help you, particularly in the early stages, and that means ladies of the manor.
Very often.
It's very, very difficult, isn't it? Very difficult.
Of course, less and less will it matter, but it has mattered up until now, really.
Mm.
But of course, as Dame May Kirwan once said to me, there is nothing more difficult than really to get the right people at national level to do things for you, and nothing more difficult than to get the kind of speakers who will understand what you're asking them to do, in a sense. And I always think she was very right there in that. But it's a very narrow community at national level, really, if you're not careful.
Yes, yes. Well, certainly. Consisted of just two people, as far as I can see.
No, but I mean, even quite widely, the people that share the same experiences, there's not very many of them, really.
No, I agree.
There's great masses of really brilliant people that you never hear their names.
Yes, yes.
Today, it's unless you're in politics or on the stage or in some of the pop quarters, nobody knows anything about you.
Yes. Yes, it's difficult to get the right balance between seeking for influential people and seeking for as large a membership as you can get. I mean, you've got to somehow combine the two, haven't you? It's very, very difficult.
Very difficult.
At least, must
see, look at the difficulty that is in leadership in our own country just now.
Yes.
And there are bound to be as many good leaders in the country as ever there were.
Yes.
If they just would wake up and think that the job's there to be done.
Because one of the main problems is that they...